The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
And I'm delighted to have you here, too. Join the conversation, 770-5633-770-KMED. The email, Bill, at BillMeyerShow.com. What do you think about this, this situation that happened in Medford the other day? We have graffiti reading, deny, defend, depose, found on the I-5 wall in South Medford. Graffiti featuring the words deny, defend, and depose, along with an anarchy symbol, discovered Monday on the sound barrier wall along the northbound exit 27 ramp of I-5. Now, the wall was located on a property belonging to the Rogue Valley Manor, has been a frequent target for graffiti, this being reported by KOBI 5. Lots of graffiti owned by the Rogue Valley Manor. They're always having to clean this out, but it does seem to be connected to the recent headlines that we had with the United Healthcare guy. Local authorities are investigating. Rogue Valley Manor director Dave Keaton believes the vandalism is likely the work of a habitual graffiti artist rather than a broader coordinated effort. The phrase deny, defend, and depose, combined with the anarchy symbol, seems to reference words found on the shell casings used in the murder of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson in New York City. Luigi Mangione, arrested and charged with the CEO's murder late Monday after being arrested at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. McDonald's of all places. And then everybody's going in and doing bad reviews of the McDonald's. If you, I don't know if you heard about that one. But anyway, city ordinance that the graffiti's on private property. Property owner is required to remove it within 10 days, according to Lieutenant Jeff Patrick with Medford Police. So we have a great relationship with Rogue Valley Manor, have made contact, and that graffiti will be removed. So I guess we got the anarchy symbols that were put up there along with this. And do you think that this is a growing thing, that there's a growing percentage of people who actually believe or feel that way, that that it's time to take matters in your own hands when it comes time to, in other words, taking out the capitalist? Do you think that there's how big of a underbelly of society do you think that is? I think that would be an interesting question. I'd love to get your opinion on it. What has concerned me is every time I see something like this come up, and you'll hear people talk about it's capitalism. Well, this is the dangers of capitalism or unfettered capitalism. And it's because we don't have enough regulation on things, unfettered capitalism. You know, even Dr. Carol Lieberman and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday. We were talking about the insurance world. And she told me offline, I think when I was getting ready to come in here, well, you know, she's responding to, or he's responding or acting out against the abuses, the gross abuses of capitalism, words to that effect. I forget exactly what it was. It wasn't on the air, but it's when I was talking with her before I brought her on to talk about that case. And yet, none of us have been living under capitalism. What part of our lives has actually been the capitalistic system? We have examples of capitalism where we have some methodologies of capitalism in there. But how often are we actually working with a pure capitalist system in which willing buyer, willing seller? We got a willing seller, willing buyer, and nobody's getting in between it. As I've gotten older, I've realized that in the United States of America, I have never lived under truly free market capitalism. None of us has. And yet every time we look at, and we'll say that, well, look at those capitalistic pigs that are running the health insurance system. The only reason they're able to do what they do is because they've been granted exclusive government privileges and monopolies. Just about everywhere where you see the rackets going on, it's coming from some government regulation or privilege. Because the government doesn't let businesses just go. Well, even look at what happened in the 2008 great financial crash that was going on at that point. You know, the Great Recession ended up happening at that point. You know, and remember that, it was figured that everything, there were all these banks that needed to die and go away from all their bad decisions were propped up by the federal government and the Federal Reserve. Every time it happens, they, you know, the bad people, the people that are running the rackets, the ones that made bad decisions in the first place, they never get punished. In fact, you get large enough, you just get a bigger bailout. As an example, I was reading the other day in Financial Blog that Bank of America is essentially a dead man walking, a dead bank walking right now. And they're all talking about how are we going to bail this out when it goes down. Now, I'm not talking about the type of thing in which they're not going to be able to pay off your deposits if you have money in Bank of America. But Bank of America is one of the banks which is underwater heavily because they bought a lot of government bonds at that point because it was considered a safe asset and they put it on their books. I don't want to get off into the weeds on this sort of thing, but they bought these bonds paying like 1%, and then the interest rates soar, and then the interest rates soar, and those bonds go down in value. And there are some that are saying that Bank of America, if they actually had to liquidate those bonds and pay off depositors and do everything like that, would be functionally broke right now. No one's talking about it. It's just kind of like out there. It's like, yeah, everybody knows it. It's a real problem that's going on here. But, you know, it's too big to fail. So, you know, we have to be able to find some way to prop it up. I mean, that's the way the system always goes. Nobody fails. Little guys are allowed to fail. Big guys are not. And that's kind of where we find ourselves. And, you know, this deny, defend, depose from the essentially this anarchist point of view and an evil capitalism. No, it's not evil capitalism, because capitalism would just have a business that behaves badly, just goes down in flames and gets cut up and sold for scrap to some other business. But no, that's not it. We merge it with another one and the government cuts a deal. But it really concerns me that we have so many younger people that will look at deny, defend, depose and the shooting death of the UnitedHealthcare CEO as, well, he's just a victim of capitalism. There's almost nothing about the insurance business, the health insurance industry right now, that is pure market capitalism. It just isn't. I don't know if you have a comment on that or not, but that's just, I know it's not Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. It's Wheels Up Wednesday instead, but that's one that's in my craw. Love to get your opinion on it if you want. 770-563-3770-KMED. What's an example of truly pure free market capitalism in your life? Probably your garage sale, and that may be about it. Am I right or wrong? 770-5633. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
When it's time for a new roof.
News Talk 106.3-KMED. This is the Bill Meyer Show.
So we see that the anarchists end up putting graffiti up there on the freeway wall on Monday. I guess it's going to get cleaned up. I don't know if it's been cleaned up. Yes, you know, the deny, depose, defend, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I can't help but think that anarchy, that focus on the anti-capitalist bent, grows as we continue to see more situations in which rarely do companies get punished for bad behavior. Or if they do get punished by bad behavior, it's because they didn't behave according to the way the government wants you to behave, which is usually anti-business. And so we have an entire generations that are growing up and thinking that that the United States and the rest of the world, that we're living in this free market capitalism, when in honesty, everything is managed by the government, top to bottom. You can have your company, but you only have your company as you jump through every single little hoop and regulation, top to bottom, everywhere. Even from you wanting to open up a bakery here in Southern Oregon, you want to do a bakery. I'll give you an example of that. Don Hurley used to live here, worked on Cool, and he's one of my colleagues here. He moved to Tennessee, all right? He and his wife are now working really hard. He got out of radio. And they're now doing nothing but developing their bakery model there. Homemade bread that they've been doing. And it's now getting huge in their area. And they started in the kitchen. Because in Tennessee, you can just start baking bread and then you start selling it. Try to do that in Jackson or Josephine County. Where is your commercial kitchen? Do you have this permit? Are you doing your corporate activity tax? There's just a whole lot of it. Now, that's the difference between the different states. But overall, the entire United States system is, where's your permit? And whatever is not permitted is required. You know, that's where we are. And so, is it any wonder that you get these kids that are looking at what's going on here and then shooting the United Healthcare guy because they're thinking, well, this is a capitalist pig. No, that's a government-granted privilege. These big health insurance companies, all right? And they're doing it at the behest of the government. That's Obamacare, my friend. Let me go to Terry. Hey, Terry. I'm sorry, not Terry. Chris is in Medford. Hello, Chris. How are you doing this morning?
Doing pretty good. So I, yesterday, saw just the exact example of this. It was a lady in front of me at the line at the Costco pharmacy.
Yes.
And she had state health care. And they told her medication was going to be $1,200.
Okay.
Because it was a generic. And her insurance didn't cover it. So that's her state insurance did not cover the generic. But if she got the brand name, then it would cover it.
What?
Yes.
The generic would have had to have been considerably less costly, right?
Correct.
Huh. So we had a little racket going on, a little grant of privilege for the name brand, I guess. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. Yeah. And they ran it, and the name brand covered all of it, and she didn't have any cost. But it was going to be $1,200 for the generic. I just can't say that enough. It blew my mind.
$1,200 for the generic, which tells you how much that the name brand must have cost.
Right.
So, boy, you have to wonder, what kind of lobbyists did the name brand drug company have, huh?
Well, in going into the state coffers, there's money being exchanged either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a payoff, there's a you know, a favoritism for that name brand drug. This is going to be my conspiracy theory Thursday, but this topic came up and it was just too relevant.
So you just brought a little early. I'm good with that. Okay. Thank you for the call. Thanks for sharing it, Chris. Let me go to Steve. Steve, go ahead. Fire away. What's on your mind?
Okay. On the terrorist that killed the CEO of United Healthcare, I look at him and I see a lot of kids who have gone through the school system for 12, 14, 16, even 18 years, and they've been indoctrinated the whole time. You think about the Free Palestine people that were out there protesting, and there were lots of them, and they were radical. So this guy had a trigger in that he hurt his back, and he hurt, and he felt like they didn't take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
So he lashed out at the CEO. I just wonder how many other people are out there that have been steeped in this craziness.
But they've also been convinced that somehow this is free market capitalism, and so they're anti-capitalists.
Yes.
See, that's what I'm getting at here. Yeah,
yes.
They're
yes.
anti-capitalists, and when it comes right down to it, is that so much of what is called capitalism right now is just a bunch of rackets with government rent-seeking contracts and deals. Just like what Chris was talking about a moment ago.
Yes,
the name brand drug, which would be much, much more expensive, that gets covered in the state plan, right? But the generic that would actually save money doesn't get covered. It's like, wow. Boy, what a privilege.
The school system has created rage in these young people. And
but they're not connecting it, though, to what the system really is. They're not connecting it to that. They're not connecting it. We lost your call somehow, Steve. Sorry about that. Let me go to David. David's in Phoenix. Fire away. Go ahead.
Good morning, Bill. two things. Number one, yesterday I was listening to the radio, and a gal from one of these energy racket groups was being interviewed, and she spoke as if it was a girl in the sixth grade. It kind of freaks me out. That's a new phenomenon I've noticed. These adults on the radio, and I think it's a kid talking, and it's a grown up.
Is it the up talking sort of thing? Like, I'm here to talk about energy efficiency, right? That kind of thing.
Yes, but it's also a little girl's voice. Can we have candy? It's just a weird. I think it goes back to that gal that, are you scary? You know, she was a professor at Stanford being interviewed, you know, in the Kavanaugh thing. And you're scary. I'm scared. Hey, is that a happy boy? You know, I mean, it's like, God, it's freaky. You know, it really does creep me out. I gotta tell you.
I gotta say that.
Well, you know, I think it's bring your kid to work today, right? Like there's a six. Oh, I'm sorry. This is my daughter. She's a little anxious. I had to bring her to work with me today, you know, right? No, it is the 47-year-old woman who's the president of whatever talking. You know?
Yeah, but taking it back to, I mean, you have the inculcation in the government education complex then, which is a racket in and of itself, though. They condition the kids to see that the problems within the system are capitalism, and yet free market capitalism would be the cure to actually what ails them. But they look at government-run rackets, essentially, or government-favored rackets, as somehow free market capitalism. You see what I'm getting at? This is what I'm getting at. They're going and shooting the CEOs of the people.
But she was talking about how she was being interviewed and how they'll come out to your house and tell you how expensive your electricity is and tell you that you should, you know, put in storm windows, and they'll help you get an approved through their organization, their approved group of contractors, to which I'm sure they get some kind of kickback. You know, they tell you to turn off lights and use low, you know, efficient light bulbs and stuff. And I thought, didn't we do all that back in the 70s? Didn't we have this caulking your doors and windows thing back in the 70s? I think so.
Yeah, but you have to understand now you have to have a government worker caulking the windows. That's the only way that you can caulk properly.
But the thing that bothered me is when he asked, well, how is your you're a not-for-profit, how are you paid for? Well, everybody pays on their electric bill.
Ah.
And I said, so because I have high electric prices, I'm going to pay on my electric bill what makes my electric bill higher to give you money to come out and tell me how to save money on my electric bill.
Yes, and then we have kids that are growing up thinking that is free market capitalism, David, okay?
It was crazy. And the other thing that I got to get out before I bust is that this thing where any government person talking about employers, they use the term employers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not talking about the state. They're talking about a private business having people working for them. They're an employer. And I'm thinking that business didn't go into business to be an employer or a cash cow for the government. They went into business for their own reasons. And if they share a little bit with the government, that's fine. And if they need help and they happen to hire somebody because the guy running the business can't be in five places at the same time, so he needs help, he hires somebody. But they act like the purpose of the business
is to hire the person.
Is A, to employ people, and B, to be revenue for the county of Jackson or the city of Ashland or the state of Oregon or the federal government. The attitude is so mind-blowing. It almost blows my mind that anybody would even want to step up and start a business.
But taking it back to the source, though, that system, as you described it, though, is exactly what kids think of as free market capitalism. When I say kids, I'm speaking of young adults in many cases.
Sure.
And it has absolutely no basis in reality, but that is the reality of the government indoctrination complex, you know, coming out of the educational colleges. Appreciate the call there. Dave's here. Hey, Dave, fire away.
Yeah, well, first place, we live in a public-private partnership, and the first one was the Federal Reserve. And so we have crony socialism, because socialism is where they partner up with you as a business, and they tell you how to run your business.
Well, I would call that more like crony fascism. I'm not talking about fascism like, you know, goose-stepping idiots. I'm not like that. but that you have your business, but you can only run your business the way that the government permits you to. That's all.
Right, and you got to be in the public-private partnership so that the government takes the liability and you get all the profits.
And ultimately, look at what we have with United Healthcare. United Healthcare, the CEO, brutally gunned down under the so-called abuses of capitalism, when United Healthcare, and like every other health insurance company, is essentially a government public-private partnership with private investors making bank on it, you know, in the stock market, right? I mean, that's really what we're looking at here. But yet kids are thinking, oh, this is pure free market capitalism. No, it's all half run by the government. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
Yeah, this is John.
Hey, John.
I agree with you on the fascist thing. I think I phoned in once before. But anyway, on a lighter note, the last time I think there was really free market capitalism here in the country was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. And, hey, where's my beads, man?
So you got to go back, what, about 40, 50 years, right? That's the, where's the weed, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, see, willing seller, willing buyer. There we go. But that can't be permitted either. Appreciate the call. Take one more. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello?
Is that me, Bill?
Yep, that's you, Matt. Fire away.
I'm going to stay with your Wheels Up Wednesday theme and staying on this other topic also. Back when I was a much younger man, I have a brother who was quite handy with cars. He and his buddies used to go out and buy Volkswagens, fix them up, and then sell them. Perfect capitalism. The only problem was, if you do it too often, they required you in California to register as a car dealer. So why the heck can't a young guy who's industrious and good with his hands go out and buy used cars, fix them up, and then go ahead and sell them, and then make a profit?
Because he can't possibly be part of that system unless he's paying the rent and following under the apparatchiks running the regulatory state. That's why.
It's insane. What a perfect business for a young man who's good with his hands and enjoys working on cars to be able to build something on his own. And then all of a sudden you have to get licensed. I'll give you another example. What if you had a business and you just had a pressure washer? You went down to Home Depot, whatever, bought a pressure washer, and you're just knocking on doors saying, hey, I noticed you got a lot of moss in your walkway. You know, I'll charge you $60 to come in and pressure wash your driveway. Why does that guy have to have a business license?
Doesn't make any sense at all. But you see, but everybody wants the business license because everybody has to take their little nip. They got to take a nip, dip their beak, as I think the mobsters used to talk about it, right?
That's my favorite one, dip their beak. I'll leave you with this. You have United Health. I'm looking at a chart. This thing was trading, let me pull that up again, get a closer view. So this was trading at, before Obamacare passed, right around $30.
$30 before Obamacare passed. And then the big free market capitalism bill of Obamacare passes. What happened?
It went to $600. It's come off that a little bit, but it went to $600 since 2010.
Uh-huh.
So here's what happened. You have what the other gentleman said, with these kids are getting indoctrinated to hate our country and to hate capitalism. As you point out, we don't have capitalism. And so they grow up with that. And then they hear that a guy who makes $10 million a year running a gigantic health insurance company gets gunned down by a guy who had health issues and felt, for whatever reason, we don't know the whole story yet.
Yeah.
But when you had the financial crisis, it's the same thing. When you have these large events like this, it does seem unfair. It seems unfair to people. Wall Street, I've always said this, they are the worst ambassadors for Wall Street. They are their own worst enemy. If they conducted themselves in a proper open market capitalist way, people wouldn't have a problem. But I told Pete DeFazio, who used to be my congressman before Obamacare passed, those stocks had already, the health insurance stocks were already moving higher. And when I asked him, I said, why are these stocks going up? You just spent 20 minutes telling us that you're finally going to stick it to the insurance companies. Why are they going up? Everybody, all the big money thinks that these stocks are going higher. Why? And So
because the big money knew that Obamacare was not sticking it to the insurance companies. It was essentially sticking it to the people, but the money was going to be there because of the big government grant of privilege of corporate. Would that be fair? You know,
I asked Pete, I said, so are these insurance companies writing the legislation? He says, well, they're a big part of this, so of course they're going to have input.
Yes.
That's all I needed to say.
That's all you needed to know. See, that was it. That was it. Right there.
Bill, when I got outside, I got surrounded by a bunch of people asking to look at my charts that I brought and my price charts of these stocks. Let me see those. What do you know? You know what? I said, I don't know. I just pulled up a chart. You don't have to know anything. Just look at this. Why are they going up? If this is going to hurt them, why is everybody on Wall Street buying the heck out of these stocks? It has been for 15 years.
Excellent comment and call. Thank you for sharing. I don't think anything goes away until you have to get rid of the government rackets. And it's all government rackets at this point. It's one interference built on top of another interference. And, you know, I was talking about like my friend who moved to Tennessee and now they're making money selling bread. They started out of their yard or out of their kitchen. You couldn't do that here in Oregon, right? Because we're farther.
Why did the Amish come out of the closet in Pennsylvania and finally vote?
Because they were on the menu.
They wouldn't let them sell their milk. They couldn't sell their meat. They couldn't. The government came in and was closing them down. And for the first time, they saw the walls closing in.
That's right. Good point. Thanks for making that there. All right. Let's hold the calls off here for a little while because I've been abusing Kevin Starrett, the privilege of Kevin Starrett's time. We're going to get an update on the a scary ghost gun lawsuit. We got that coming up.
Matt here with an urgent message from the Josephine County Republican Party. Similar to what President Trump experienced,
MediaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Hurry in and trade up to a K4, $169 a month, or Telluride, $229 a month at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KDB.
Wait a minute. Was that sound the sound of a ghost gun going off? I don't know. Let me talk with Kevin Starrett. Kevin Starrett is the head of Oregon Firearms Federation, OregonFirearms.org, and there is a ghost gun lawsuit. Now, we say ghost gun, but it's actually outlawing the possession and creation of personally made firearms here. And, Kevin, we have an update, first off, on House Bill 2005, which, unfortunately, the Republicans of that day, because they wouldn't walk out, ended up allowing to go into effect, right? Isn't that why we find ourselves in this lawsuit right now here in the state of Oregon?
That's exactly correct. The House Republicans had the ability to stop this latest attack at no risk or cost to themselves and instead did nothing except a photo op, which was a colossal fraud.
Yeah, they put up a photo of all the Republicans in the House at that time with their, I think it was a $25,000 fake check held up. This is, well, yeah, we allowed this bill to be passed, but we're going to contribute $25,000 for the lawsuit, which, of course, would be a drop in the bucket, you know, to fighting the state of Oregon, you know, on such matters of Second Amendment rights here in the state. And by the way,
it wasn't every House rep. I believe, if I recall, James Hebe was not on the steps there. You know, James Hebe, who got muscled out of his Republican seat by a Republican, Christine Drazen.
Well, you know, you got to understand the Iverson clan. Everybody else has got it. The whole idea is that you got to take care of the caucus because everybody's got to get paid. I guess that's all there is to it. I hate to be that cynical about it, but after several years of observing it, I can't help but be it. Sorry. But now then, what is happening, though, with this lawsuit about House Bill 2005?
What's happening is along with the Firearms Policy Coalition, our partners, for whom we are very grateful, we brought a lawsuit to say, look, you can't outlaw personally made firearms. They have a long history. This violates the Second Amendment on its face, clearly. So the state's response has been to go to, and of course, the court, the judge in the court, immediately found against us without, in the entire course of the hearing, didn't ask a single question, had no interest in one question about anything, just boom, found against us.
All right. So in other words, a predetermined outcome. We had a judge with a predetermined outcome on this. Okay.
Right. Yeah. All right. She just was not interested in learning anything. It was like, we knew exactly where this was going. So the the state then basically asked the court to just dismiss our case. So this is, I think, the second response to that, where the state is saying, just throw this out or have a judgment against them immediately. So this has been the response. They're basically saying, look, the reality is that under previous Supreme Court decisions, it's the state's job to defend any law that violates the Second Amendment. Then if the state comes along and bans guns, they have to explain why they're doing it and what historical precedent there was for this particular act.
But there is no historical precedence for this act that was taken by the legislature, is there?
Precisely. It doesn't exist. And this is where, I'm glad if you look at the most recent motion, they make that pretty clear. They're saying, I think the mistake that's been made in previous cases is that when the court comes and says, oh, look, you have to prove to us, it's basically our responsibility to prove to us that we are allowed to have a Second Amendment. And what the reality is that it's under the Bruin decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, it's the state's responsibility to defend their position, to demonstrate that, yeah, this is something that has a long history of being done in the country. And obviously it does not, because historically, some of the most important advances that have been made in firearms technology have been made by individuals who are working in their own shops and garages, and homemade firearms have a history as old as this country. And in fact, the requirement to have a serial number on a firearm didn't even become law in the United States until 1968.
Not that long ago, in the grand scheme of things. No.
No historical precedent for this. And so I think while I understand that judges will do whatever they want, and we see that all the time, the state has no case here. So this is the latest that's been going on. I just wanted people to know, because there's so many different lawsuits going on, not just here in Oregon, but around the country, that it's easy to start losing track. But the fact is, this particular law is so egregious and makes no sense. And of course, the other side has been basically just been lying about this, because they've been saying, well, we didn't tell people they can't make their own guns. We just said we want a serial number on it. But that's simply not true. The law very specifically says you cannot make it, because unless it has a serial number on it that was applied by somebody other than yourself at the time it was created, it's illegal. And obviously that's impossible.
You can't get someone to put a serial number on your homemade firearm after the fact. You just can't do that. Well, no one can do that. It's illegal according to the law, because the fact that you made it
before you make it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You would have to be making it while someone who is there ready to apply who is authorized to put the serial number on it is right there in your workshop and putting it on there as you make it, I guess, or maybe puts it on the metal first. I don't know how they would actually make that happen. Put it on a piece of metal.
Possible. Mm-hmm. But, the state's position has also been that these firearms, which, for people who are not familiar with the common personally made firearm, they are virtually exact duplicates of the most common handguns and rifles that are commercially available. I mean, they are essentially indistinguishable. They're identical. The only difference being, of course, that depending on the skill of the person making it, one might function better than another. But if a person does it correctly, they are, for all intents and purposes, identical to a firearm that you would buy in a store if the Oregon State Police allowed you to do that, which is no longer the case. But the state's position is that these firearms can be banned because they are, quote, dangerous and unusual, which firearms that are, quote, dangerous and unusual can be regulated. But these are neither dangerous. I mean, every firearm is dangerous, but they can't be dangerous and unusual if they're identical to the most common firearms that are available in the United States right now.
Well, that doesn't stop the state of Oregon, though, from using that kind of an argument, though. And I would imagine that cases like what we're looking at here with the alleged shooter of the United Healthcare CEO the other day, that Luigi fella. And all you're hearing out of the media right now is scary ghost gun, ghost gun, ghost gun. It was a ghost gun. Well, hey, it being a homemade firearm didn't make him get away with the crime, did it?
Well, I'm not going to comment on whether or not it was a homemade firearm, because the fact is that from the beginning of this, it's pretty difficult to tell from the video what it was. Mm-hmm. And of course, news reports are always wrong for the first 3 weeks.
But all I'm saying is that even if it is a homemade firearm, so what?
The fact is that whether it was a homemade firearm or a commercially available firearm that had been defaced so the serial number was not visible, which is when the feds and the state report, oh, we've confiscated this massive new amounts of homemade firearms, what they call ghost guns. In fact, most of those are commercial firearms that have the serial numbers ground off.
Oh, they call the ones that with the serial numbers ground off ghost guns? That's ridiculous. That's
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the statistics that are now provided saying there's been this enormous increase in the confiscation of what they call ghost guns, the fact is most of them are not at all. They're commercially available guns that have been stolen and traded on the black market, and the serial numbers are then ground off. And so if those are confiscated, if people are caught with them, it demonstrates that the availability of a serial number has very little to do with the solving of a crime.
Yeah.
And if whether this was a personally made firearm or a firearm with the serial number ground off, as you just pointed out, it didn't have any impact on his being apprehended because there were 10,000 other clues and bits of information that led to his arrest. So the fact is that, you know, it just is, it's not that easy. And this is something that's been demonstrated in court over and over again. It's not that easy to just bang out a homemade firearm. It requires a lot of work and a lot of skill. And if you want to go knock over the local grocery store, it's much easier to do it with a gun that you got on the black market. And so the concept that these guns are, you know, one of the other things that the state has been saying is the only purpose of these guns is to be used in crimes. They said, well, if you didn't want to use it in a crime, you'd put a serial number on it. Well, we've already demonstrated that you cannot do that legally. But the fact is that in most of the country, it's still perfectly legal to manufacture a gun yourself. And we have no idea how many of those guns have been made and are out there, because the only ones they know about are the ones that were used, that were confiscated in the use of a crime.
And maybe that's really the root of the problem as far as the government types are concerned, is that no one should have a Second Amendment right unless we're regulating you. I guess that's really what it comes right down to. And yet that's not exactly what the Second Amendment is all about. I do seem to recall that little pesky part of it, shall not be infringed.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's not complicated. It's not the least ambiguous. But the reality is that for them to suggest that, look, you know, we confiscated these firearms at crime scenes completely ignores all the ones they don't know anything about. So it's just, and how do you respond to the argument about, well, these are, where are all the guns that aren't used in crime? Well, of course, we don't know. That's the point. But it really doesn't matter, because what type of gun it was or where it came from is a pretty immaterial factor in solving a crime, as we just learned. You know, I mean, when New York wants to solve a crime, look, people get murdered in New York every day. You know, if you're a young black man in New York and you get murdered by another young black man, there's not going to be any resources put to catching your killer.
Yeah, but if you are going to be murdered by, if you're a young black man and you are being murdered in New York City, it's much morally superior to be murdered with a firearm with a serial number on it. We know that. It makes a big difference.
Or you know, yeah, I mean, and the whole thing about where the gun came from, the suppressor, all that, really hasn't made any difference. There was the killing took place on video. It had pictures of his face. You know, they were able to track him. We don't do that when poor people are killed, of course. But it's all a big charade, and it's just what's happened now that the technology exists for people. You know, as a matter of fact, the people who first kind of came up with this technology made the point that said, look, you know, your gun control schemes are basically dead because the toothpaste is out of the tube here. This thing can be done. Which is why now they're trying to regulate machines that actually generate these parts, because the state is terrified that people can actually get around the restrictions that the state technically has no authority to even make.
Interesting talk there, Kevin, as always. OregonFirearms.org, the website. And by the way, still time to get your state tax credit. They will actually, you could actually ensure that Tina Kotek doesn't get at least, what, $100 of your money if they donate to the PAC?
Right? If you file jointly, if you're married, $50 if you file singly.
Okay, very good. OregonFirearms.org. Always appreciate that talk. And, you know, before we take off, I was talking earlier, and the reason I brought you on late was that we were talking about how, you know, kids are all kind of in this anarchistic mode in which we're going after the capitalist pigs. That's essentially, I think, at the heart of what happened with the United Health Care CEO. And yet, none of these kids have lived under free market capitalism, but yet they blame capitalism at every step. Everything is a government-based and government racket. Would you agree with me on that? That's kind of where I'm coming from. How do you see it?
Well, I'm at this point no longer. I mean, I've always believed that most of this was a government racket. I mean, why are we in wars all over the world all the time, killing people we don't know in countries we don't understand? Because it enriches the corporations that build bombs. And the same thing is true with the monopoly on healthcare, which is getting infinitely worse, obviously, as every small provider gets gobbled up or put out of business. But I've come to the conclusion now that the government's largely irrelevant in this because the government doesn't make any decisions. The corporations make the decisions, and then they give the directions to the Congress critters who they own.
And much like how Matt Money Guy I was talking to a little while ago was talking about Obamacare was essentially written by the healthcare industry, the insurance industries.
Yeah, I mean, look at why Pete Hegseth is getting so much pushback from senators, Republican senators, because he's kind of taken the position that he's questioning the mindless war machine, right? Well, why are senators so supportive of the mindless war machine?
Because it's profitable.
Owned by a mindless war machine.
Yeah, right? It's profitable. Yeah, there you go. In fact, you know, this is what we need. Kevin, we can take care of the war machine very, very easily. All we have to do is require Congress critters, the senator, maybe even the presidents, too, for that matter, everybody who has donated to you, all your sponsorships there, kind of like NASCAR. Put the stickers on their suits, all right, and their pantsuits and everything else. And, okay, here's Boeing, here's Raytheon, you know, do that sort of thing on everyone. What do you think about that? I mean, and wear it proudly, kind of like, you know, who's really sponsoring you? What do you think?
Well, I love the idea, and I think more and more people are coming to understand how this game is played. I mean, when you look at someone like Lindsey Graham, you know, this great conservative Republican is like, oh, we've got to bomb everybody all the time. Why? Well, because Ukraine has natural resources and it's all about the business interests. And it's kind of like it's really ironic for someone like myself, you know, an old conservative guy to be looking at Bob Dylan songs from the 70s and early late 60s and 70s and they go, well, you know what, man, these guys kind of had a point.
Yeah.
You know, is that our foreign policy is completely driven by people who make bombs and then get the contracts to rebuild the stuff they blew up.
Wash, rinse, repeat. And so that's what needs to be repaired. Can President Trump affect some of that change? God willing. I hope so. But who knows? We'll find out. It's going to be a very interesting 4 years, Kevin. Thanks for the call, as always. We'll be in touch. Take care.
Thank you.
Kevin Starr at Oregon Firearms Federation. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.